Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It was a good day to be a fan of Bay Area football. It's the first time all season that both the Raiders and the Niners have won on the same day, though it comes the week after they were both eliminated officially from playoff contention. But I guess the rule of spoiler is not a bad one. Not to mention, you like to see the fight and the leadership out of your locker room, even when there's technically nothing left to play for in terms of the team, right? So they're playing for jobs, they're playing for contracts. Obviously, these guys still recognize that for them personally, there can be a lot on the line. They can be under a microscope. This final month may determine something about their future. But for the team, how do you keep going when you know you're not part of the playoff conversation? You don't even have any shred of hope left to cling to. Well, you go out there and you play the role of spoiler. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Halfway through our first show of the work week, there have been a ton of surprises so far in week 14. What does Monday night hold in store? The top two NFC wild card candidates will square off as the Vikings traveled to Seattle. And I didn't even realize this until I happened to be dissecting the standings following the games that we saw on Sunday. Do you know that the Vikings and the Seahawks are the only two teams not leading their divisions that are above 500 in the NFC? That's just odd. Where in the AFC, you have, what, five teams right now that are still in contention for wild cards? Let's see if I can quick look through them here. You've got, let's see, four teams that are 7-6, and then the Chargers, yes, who are at 10-3. And that's in the AFC. So you've got a whole mass of teams that are right there for wild cards or even division titles. The AFC North is now completely up for grabs, and the Texans have not locked up the AFC South. They've got the Colts and Titans only two games back with 3 weeks to go. But in the NFC, it's different. It doesn't mean that a team that's at 6-7, like, say, the Eagles or the Redskins or the Panthers, though that just sounds odd, it doesn't mean one of those teams couldn't still insert itself into the conversation, but they would all need help. Right now, the Seahawks and the Vikings are the two teams not leading divisions that are above 500 in the NFC. And the Seahawks have won three games in a row and would like to be able to move their record to 8-5, kind of solidify that position as the top wild card. And it would be a big blow to the Vikings as well, because they would fall back to 500. They have that tie there, but they'd be 6-6-1. So we'll see if the Vikings can recover after last week's loss in New England, or can the Seahawks keep it going? Russell Wilson has played some incredible football over this streak, but they've been up and down and up and down and up and down. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio and on Facebook. We've got our Monday MVP poll. We've got a comeback player of the year poll. I think it should be Andrew Luck, but great suggestion from a listener, Dave, who said no way his vote's going to J.J. Watts. We kind of put the poll up there, and we'll check your temperature when it comes to comeback player of the year. We've also going to talk about these Bay Area teams, and in doing so, the Steelers and the Broncos. But the Steelers have really hurt themselves over these last several weeks and could have an injured quarterback. So there's a lot that we don't know. And the Steelers just now they're going the wrong direction in the final month of the regular season. We're inside the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. All right, first let's talk about the Raiders and the Steelers, okay? Because John Gruden, if there is one person in football who has been more maligned than John Gruden this year, I don't know who it is. I mean, this guy has taken every hit that football fans can possibly drum up, because you know everything under the sun is John Gruden's fault. Apparently Reggie McKenzie doesn't even matter there anymore. And there were actually reports circulating on CBS over the weekend that he was about to get bounced from the Raiders front office. I don't know if that's true. He laughed and rolled his eyes when he was asked about it, so I have no idea, but there was a report on CBS that his days are numbered in Oakland. Actually, the team's days are numbered in Oakland, as you know. So here's John Gruden in the first year of his return to the Bay Area, and this team's already been eliminated from the playoffs, and they host the Pittsburgh Steelers, who should have had a real sense of urgency and should have been in a position where they would have done anything to win. The problem is Chris Boswell is having one heck of a year. It is amazing how many missteps and miscues he's had as their kicker. And I keep wondering, when are they going to let him go? And yet they haven't, and it continues to happen week after week. This wasn't the only problem with the Pittsburgh Steelers, so it's not like you can pin it all on Chris Boswell. He certainly, though, kind of like John Gruden in Oakland, he certainly becomes the whipping boy for a lot of what the Steelers have suffered through. It really was a brutal second half for Pittsburgh. They did have a 14-10 lead at halftime, but then Roethlisberger doesn't start the second half because he's got a rib injury. That's all we know. And instead, you see Josh Dobbs out there quarterbacking the offense for the Steelers. Well, they come up empty on four consecutive drives. Oakland finally takes the lead on a possession that stretches nearly 8 minutes. It goes 14 plays and stretches 8 minutes. I'm not even sure that I thought the Raiders were capable of holding onto the ball offensively for that long. Not this season, anyway. And how about this? They convert on a 4th-and-3 to reach the red zone. And so for Oakland, they are in a position now where they're feeling themselves, right? I mean, they've got this 4th-and-3 conversion. They get in the red zone. Lee Smith then catches the go-ahead touchdown. The Steelers put Roethlisberger back on the field. And don't ask me why. Maybe they thought they could get away with having Dobbs quarterback and still protect that lead. Maybe they were hoping their defense could come up big. But at that point, they'd had enough. So Raiders take the lead, and Roethlisberger goes back on the field. And right away, it pays dividends because they get a quick touchdown. But their defense then, which is probably worn out from having been on the field for 8 minutes, cannot stop the Raiders on the Raiders' next possession. And they right away go 75 yards and boom, score again. So that's where we are, the final Pittsburgh chance. Again, Roethlisberger is out there on the field, and they look good. They're in great position because Ryan Switzer returns the kick to the Pittsburgh 30, so they've got good field position. And then it wasn't quite Miami dramatics, but they have a bit of a hook and ladder. And Juju Smith-Schuster, I'm watching it with my mouth open like, you've got to be kidding me, Oakland. And Juju Smith-Schuster then goes, it was like 40 yards. And he gets into field goal range. But that's not good news this year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Chris Boswell on the field is just not good news.
This will be a 40-yarder. He's missed a 37-yarder earlier today.
He slipped.
He slips. The Raiders win it. Can you believe it?
Oh, my.
The Raiders are a winner. Let the celebration begin, baby.
And the Steelers, with only 5 seconds left, are going to try a field goal of 40 yards to tie this amazing game up.
What a call by Randy Feedner.
The kick by Boswell. He slipped and fell, and the ball is loose. Oh, my goodness gracious. And the Raiders celebrate a real big upset.
So you hear Brent Musburger on the Raiders radio network, the oh my, and then you hear Bill Hillgrove on the Steelers radio network, oh my goodness. So the two sides of the coin. Yeah, Boswell, initially I think the TV call said it got blocked, but it didn't have to get blocked because it was so low after he slipped. I mean, the angle, it was going to hit the rear end. It was like a butt fumble. It was that kind of level. And so while Pittsburgh should never have been in that position to begin with, at least according to Mike Tomlin. I mean, I feel like Oakland deserves credit for an 8-minute drive that wore out the Steelers' defense. That was humongous. But just the fact that they got back into position with the Ryan Switzer return and then the Juju run up the left sideline after he takes the lateral. They did all that work. Roethlisberger comes out. Who knows how much he's hurting. And then they end up with a missed field goal. And it just, it's like a punch to the gut. But it's a signature win for John Gruden in his first year back with the Raiders.
Appreciative of the fans. That was a great atmosphere. And we overcame way too many penalties. But the character of this team is it's impressive. No matter what anybody says or saw today, the character in there is special.
Not making enough significant plays, not taking enough advantage of opportunities. And we got to look at all aspects of what we're doing in an effort to rectify that. Not only what we're doing, what we asked those guys to do, the quality in which we're doing it, all of the above.
Mike Tomlin, head coach of the Steelers. If you have not seen his reaction to the Chris Boswell slipping on the field goal attempt, it is classic. I mean, they all know that there are cameras on them, but sometimes you just can't help yourself in that moment. It is classic. We're going to find the GIF. I've seen it already, and I just actually saw it again on TV. Not the GIF, the actual reaction. So Chris is going to find that and put it up on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. You can also take our polls there, too. So it's not just Roethlisberger that we have to keep our eyes on for the upcoming game against. Anybody remember who they're playing coming up in Week 15? Oh, none other than the New England Patriots at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. On a 3-game losing streak, the Pats are coming off of a loss to Miami in which they're going to be really angry and nasty. And so those two teams will meet coming up in Week 15. It's the nationally televised game on CBS. But two things to keep your eye on this week. Thankfully, it's a full work week for the Steelers because not only will Roethlisberger be sore, a rib injury that kept him out for a good portion of the second half, but they still don't have James Conner. So Conner is hoping to be back from his ankle sprain. They're hoping against hope because without James Conner, their offense is really different. And so the Steelers fall in Oakland, 3 games in a row for them. They've dug their own hole, and now they're only a half game up in the AFC North. Even though the Ravens lost, can you imagine if the Ravens had won in Kansas City? Wowzers, the Steelers would have lost that lead atop the North Division. Let's quick talk to Sheila, who's in the Bay Area. Sheila, welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
First time caller. I'm an avid old Oakland Raider fan, and so I know all about it. Unfortunately, Mark Davis wants to go to Vegas.
Right.
And that's not going to sit well with the fans, I can tell you that much. That also upsets the team. There's no more tradition here between the 49ers and the Raiders. Mm. I come from the old school when I became Stabler's number one fan for the Hall of Fame. Uh-huh. And they won't put me in, which is not very nice of them.
Oh.
Also, I was glad that Tom Brady doesn't do much for his father. And
what? Oh, no. Let's not rip apart Brady's family.
Well,
Brady's
I'm
a family
just saying
man.
That he, I mean, no, not for his family. I'm sorry. He doesn't come out to the Bay Area where he was born and raised to San Mateo.
Well,
and doing shows or anything.
Okay, but it's hard to do. He lives on the other side of the country, and he's got a family and a bunch of young kids. And
so do other football players, but they make the cross country.
Okay, Sheila.
It was surprising that the Dolphins did beat him. I'm glad in a way that they did.
Oh. Okay.
So anyway, it's nice talking to you. And
you too. Good to talk to you, Sheila. I'm glad that Raiders gave you a victory. Thanks so much for calling from the Bay Area. 855-212-4227. We did not get to the Niners yet. We will after this next break because George Kittle had the game of his life. And also history for Aaron Rodgers. Not just because it was the first game in 13 seasons in which he's playing without Mike McCarthy. In fact, if you think about it, it's the first game Aaron Rodgers has played at all in which he's actually been playing that Mike McCarthy has not been the head coach. How about that? First start of Rodgers' career in which Mike McCarthy was not the head coach. And so we'll get to the Packers, too, as they beat the Falcons on Sunday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
The first touchdown catch by Randall Cobb since week one of the season. It was a dynamic throw from Aaron Rodgers. And as you hear with Wayne Larrivee on the Packers radio network, it set the record for most pass attempts without an interception. Now 359, or it was 359, it's more now. But he passed Tom Brady with that touchdown throw to Randall Cobb. And I guess I'm not surprised that the Packers went out there and played their rear ends off in their first game without Mike McCarthy. Of course, they want to try to show it wasn't us. They want to go out there and make it feel like the change was not completely useless. And Joe Philbin, of course, is a guy at least prepared to speak to a locker room. He's a former head coach, a former O coordinator, offensive line coach. I mean, this is a guy who has been around football for a really long time. And so here are the Packers without Mike McCarthy for the first time in the better part of 13 seasons. And he takes the high road on his way out. And then the Packers, they go and they grab a huge win. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So Joe Philbin as the interim head coach, Aaron Rodgers looking like himself, more of a run game in the second half. They didn't get much of a run game in the first half. In fact, Rodgers was their leading rusher in the first half, but they gave the ball more to Aaron Jones. After halftime, Randall Cobb helping to supplement the receiving core, and another great day from Devontae Adams. Plus, the defense stepped it up as well. I mean, this is the formula that the Packers were using to win early in the season that just fell off the map. Well, they looked a lot better on Sunday.
I think it's a great moment for, obviously, for Joe, for our guys. You know, we've been struggling in a rough stretch with some losses, some good teams, and obviously a bad loss last week. Kind of came together this week, had a nice week of practice, good preparation, and basically did what Joe had been talking about all week about complimentary football. You know, the offense had a big answer drive there in the first quarter.
Kind of an interesting nerd alert as we're talking about the offense. Joe Philbin's first game as an offensive play caller in his NFL history. He last called plays in 1996, according to him, when he was the O coordinator at Northeastern University.
That's nerd stuff.
Yeah, it is. As for Mike McCarthy, pretty amazing. The full page ad that he took out in the Green Bay Press Gazette to thank Green Bay. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure we can use our show Twitter to retweet. Not only was he allowed back at the facility and back to Lambeau after he had been fired, so he called up Mark Murphy and he asked Murphy if he could go back and speak to the coaches. Then he asked if he could go back and he could speak to the players, and would it be okay with Joe Philbin? And both of those things he was allowed to do. And so he then took out a full page ad to thank Green Bay and the fans. For those of you who don't know, he married a woman who's from a prominent Green Bay family, and there's now talk that he may actually take next year off unless the opportunity is perfect, like fits him perfectly. And what I've heard is not Cleveland, and that there are some other jobs that he would not be interested in, but that it would have to be the right move for him because he's not going to take any old job just to get back into coaching right away. And so that's just interesting. We'll see how it plays out. And you know there are going to be teams that come calling for him because of his resume, because of everything he did while he was in Green Bay, but also the way he's handled himself. I think that's classy. And he stayed humble. And he didn't allow a decision by the organization at the end, because very often how does it doesn't end the way we like it to in the majority of cases. We don't all get to ride off into the sunset after winning a Super Bowl or retire or leave on our own terms. That's not real life, whether we're talking about football or the rest of us who work in corporate America. And so he decided that he was going to make sure that the last thing Green Bay remembers about him, both the coaches that he worked with, the players that he was in those locker rooms with over and over, and the fans, they got to know and see his character one last time. He's done so much for the community, and I really appreciate that instead of saying bitter, and instead of pointing fingers and saying this wasn't my fault, instead, like a head coach should do, buck stops with him. He's taking it upon himself, and he's going to be grateful for the opportunity instead of bitter that it ended before he wanted it to. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Seeing a lot of your tweets about Sheila. Oh, don't you worry. We got you covered. Don't you worry. I'm a smart girl. And while I'm not quite like an elephant who never forgets, there are some callers that I never forget. So don't you worry. You don't need to tell me anything. You don't even need to at me because I thought about it long before you did. All right, let's talk about the other team in the Bay Area. Breakout game for a tight end named George Kittle, who apparently the Broncos defense had never heard of.
Pistol showing a little fly sweep motion. Mullins pulls the ball back, throws to a wide open Kittle near side. Kittle 40. Kittle needs a block 50. Kittle got the block.
Goodbye.
30. He is gone. Stone cold Kittle. 85 yards. Welcome to the 1,000-yard club.
So George Kittle comes just shy of the most receiving yards for a tight end in a single game in history. He actually has 210 yards all in the first half. Against the Denver Broncos, 7 catches, 210 yards, and a touchdown that goes 85. And that's Ted Robinson on the Niners radio network. And this was also a stunner. Just as the Raiders beating Pittsburgh was a surprise, the Niners going, not going anywhere, but getting on the field and protecting their actual home field there at AT&T's, or Levi's Stadium, sorry. And the Broncos going in being a team that had a lot to play for because they had won 3 in a row, including a game over the Steelers. Instead, they get shut out 20-0 in the first half. And while they're able to score a couple of touchdowns in the second half and hold the Niners scoreless, fact is that San Francisco went out there on the field and played like this was a Super Bowl. And so credit Kyle Shanahan and the veterans in that locker room. And Nick Mullins is throwing the ball around like his life depends on it. Meanwhile, whether it was just a letdown for the Broncos, I know they were missing Chris Harris, and they were also starting 7 rookies. A lot of rookies to start. They've lost a lot of guys to injuries like Emmanuel Sanders, of course, this past week, and Chris Harris. And so maybe they just fell off a cliff there. But either way, credit the Niners. Who were able to hold off the Broncos in that second half, and George Kittle, a huge reason why. So he is one of our candidates for Monday MVP. You can check that out on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our Facebook page. One note about the Broncos, Von Miller, even if they don't end up making the playoffs, who knows if they will decide to change head coaches. At the beginning of the year, the report was that if they did not make the postseason, that Elway was going to be making changes again to the coaching staff. So we'll see what happens with Vance Joseph, but they really hurt themselves by losing this game against the Niners. Von Miller and Bradley Chubb have been highlights for sure. Their rookie running backs, Philip Lindsay, he's been fantastic. And so there are a few bright lights that you can take away from the Broncos season, but Miller now has a sack in 8 consecutive games, which is the longest streak of his career. So he continues to be a soul wrecker, a game wrecker, a wrecking ball, a soul wrecker. It's so much fun to watch him play football and then to think about Bradley Chubb as well. But the defense was not prepared and not ready at all for George Kittle. All right, you can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Again, I got you covered on the Sheila thing, peeps. You don't have to worry about me. And then on our Facebook page, too, we got a couple of different polls up. We're taking your reaction to Week 14. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Oh, hey, Sheila. So good to talk to you again. So good to talk to you then as well. We know your story. We have shared it with the country. Thank you again for calling. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We got a lot going on with our social media right now. A couple of different polls. One about NFL Comeback Player of the Year. I'm kind of on the side of Andrew Luck, but we've given you an option for J.J. Watt or other. And then our typical Monday MVP poll, which is atypical. I'm pretty sure that 3 of the 4 names have not been in the poll yet this year. So I'm going to retweet, and you can check that out, A-Law Radio or After Hours CBS. And while you're on our show Twitter, we've got a bunch of goodies. The GIF of I keep seeing it. Every time I look up, Mike Tomlin is freaking out when Chris Boswell slips on the final. I'm not laughing at the slipping. I'm only laughing at the fact that every time I look up, Tomlin is reacting. It's TV gold. It's GIF gold, to be sure. So check it out. That's on our show Twitter. Also, the final play that the Miami Dolphins used that they say they practice every week for 3 years, and this is the first time they've used it. It's called Boise. Somehow, the Patriots thought they were going for a Hail Mary from 70 yards out. They didn't. And then the other thing we've got up there is the Mike McCarthy letter to Green Bay. So a bunch of NFL goodies and then our polls, too. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. So still, there's a lot to get to. Usually when I stumble into the final hour, sometimes on Sunday nights into Monday mornings, that's what it feels like. There's a lot to keep straight. We still have a game-winning touchdown for the New York Jets that snapped their six-game skid. Also, the Chargers keeping pace with the Chiefs, and they do it against the Cincinnati Bengals. And a lot of reactions still as well. So we're trying to work in as much as we possibly can. That we'll certainly return to Sunday Night Football and then some of the more fantastic finishes and surprise endings from Sunday as we get up into our final hour, which is 5 o'clock East Coast time. So a lot of people went to bed. I dare say some even before Sunday Night Football was over. Though maybe you thought defensive battle, you didn't really need to watch all the way to the end. You might have missed several interceptions, you know. So 855-212-4227. Troy is listening in Baltimore. Troy, welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy, how you doing today?
I'm good.
Good. I'm a Bronco fan, so, you know, I'm calling it. I never was on the bandwagon for this Case Keenum thing, even when they signed him in the beginning of the season. I never was on board because the guy had one good season out of six. And that's the thing there. You can't sign a guy who's been in the league 6-7 years and only had one good season.
Well, yeah, but he wasn't the starter in all those six seasons. A lot of times he was in and out of the lineup.
Yeah, but he hasn't shown you anything to show you that he can be a starter. You know what I mean? And
no, you didn't think what he did with Minnesota last year was enough?
No.
Okay.
You got to put together multiple years of it. You know what I mean? I would have rather had Bridgewater. I mean, I know he's coming off of a bad knee thing, but I mean, you've seen him, you know, progress and get better year in and year out.
So then, just to clarify, were you against the Niners giving Jimmy Garoppolo a big contract?
Garoppolo, I mean, I think you needed to see more, but I mean, when you did see him on the field, you seen him do good things. You know what I mean? When you seen Keenum on the field in the Rams, you didn't see him do good things. It wasn't until he got to Minnesota.
Okay. The Rams stunk, though, in the years that he was there. The Rams were bad. And then he was in and out of the lineup in Houston, where they also had quarterback issues. And so I get what you're saying. It was a mixed bag, and a lot of people felt the way you did. I'm just saying it's you asked that same question of someone about Jimmy Garoppolo, and generally the answer is different. So it's not necessarily how much of a resume he has, just what you've seen on the resume.
And that's what I think. And I love Elway. He's the reason why I'm a Bronco fan. But until he plunged and go out there and get that franchise guy, we always going to be where we at. I mean, the defense isn't as good as it used to be. But they made stops. They held them to two drives where they only got field goals. And then he comes out there and he's 3-and-out. And you can't keep putting an okay defense out there but not break defense out there and put them in that situation. So until we get a franchise quarterback, we're going to continue to lose, man. Thanks for taking my call, Amy.
All right, Troy, I appreciate you listening in Baltimore. 855-212-4227. Matt is in Pittsburgh. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, how you doing, Amy?
I'm good, thank you.
I just wanted to say it's just so frustrating in Pittsburgh. A lot of Steelers fans are echoing the same sentiment. Ownership doesn't hold Tomlin accountable for the various blunders for him playing down to the competition, his horrendous in-game clock management, not knowing when to call timeouts, failure to make adjustments at halftime in the secondary, having linebackers cover the other team's top receivers, and reaching in the past two drafts on first-round picks in Artie Burns and Terrell Edmonds. It's just a bunch of frustration. And I think Art Rooney II doesn't see things the way Dan Rooney did before Dan passed away. It seems like Art Rooney II is more business savvy rather than have a knowledge of the blunders that the head coach is making.
So you put all of that on the head coach, all of it, including the draft picks?
He's been on record saying that he does make he's with the GM Kevin Colbert in making the draft.
They're together, but you can't put all of that on him. Just like you can't put it on him that his starting quarterback was out for a quarter and a half with a rib injury. I don't know how that's Tomlin's fault. Not Tomlin's fault that James Conner wasn't available or that Le'Veon Bell is not playing this year. I mean, I would agree that there are every now and then suspect decisions, but you know what? Those look a whole lot different when the execution is on the field. I am not on board with this being Mike Tomlin's fault, this three-game losing skid, or the fact that they haven't won another Super Bowl. Their defense has been horrific for several years now, and they've expected the offense to make up for it. So I guess I'm just not on board with that, as much as you may say that's what everyone's frustrated about.
What about how the media is getting on Tomlin, where Ben, the post-game interview, Ben said that he was waiting to come back in the game, and Idiki, I don't know how to produce her last name, Kiko Bada was ESPN, tweeted that he said, I don't know why I didn't go back in the game. You're going to have to ask Coach about that. I was ready to go back in.
Yeah, no, the two of them have different stories, Matt. So I guess what you're saying is you believe Ben, but you don't believe Tomlin? Because I kind of feel like they didn't get their story straight. Ben said one thing, and Tomlin said something else. So are you telling me that Tomlin's lying, but not Ben?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to hear Ben's radio show tomorrow when he's asked to clarify what the truth was, you know?
Well, you're going to get his version, is my point. I mean, if Tomlin didn't know that he was ready to go in, and Ben's frustrated because he wasn't out there as quickly as he thought he needed to be, there is a medical staff that has to determine when he's ready. And as much as we feel like the head coach should know everything that's happening on the sidelines, Matt, the head coach does not know everything that's happening there on the sidelines. So maybe he just wasn't told until the point in the fourth quarter when Ben went back in.
I guess lack of communication on the sidelines between the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's like hundreds of people on the sidelines. So there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of different, things going on. He's responsible for trying to coach a football game and can't keep track of all of the injured players. It's interesting because I feel like this phenomenon has happened in Green Bay as well. Nothing's ever the quarterback's fault. It's always the coach's fault. And I get that both Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers are sacred and they've done so much for their respective franchises, but it's just not that simple. Not everything is Mike Tomlin's fault, just like not everything was Mike McCarthy's fault.
I agree. Ben leads the league with red zone INTs. I feel like he's responsible for a decent amount of the losses over the past 2 years with the interception ratio going up. I look at things from an open perspective. I'm not like a big Ben fan, or I am becoming more of a bigger Tomlin critic, though, just with lack of in-game adjustments with the linebackers covering Keenan Allen last week, making adjustments at halftime where other coaches would have made adjustments there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think you need to credit what the other team is doing too. The Chargers were playing really well, have been playing really well, and Keenan Allen's having a phenomenal year. But there's plenty of frustration to go around for sure after a three-game losing streak, especially this deep in the year.
Yep. Yeah, you're right, Amy.
All right, thanks, Matt. I appreciate your phone call.
Thanks.
Let's talk to Dre, who's in Dallas. Dre, welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, thank you.
So I was calling tonight because one thing I learned from the Cowboys' victory tonight is that the Cowboys do a better job than most of the NFL at using their first-round draft picks. I think since, 2009 – they have like 9 more Pro Bowls than the second place team and the most Pro Bowls attended by drafted players. And paying a first round pick seemed really heavy price for Cooper when the trade happened. But in hindsight, I think they look great.
Yeah, you think? I think he was actually worth more than a first round pick, especially since that first round pick's not going to be very high, more than likely.
Yeah, and he's a prototypical receiver, size, speed, frame, catching ability, and he's only 24 years old. So the more you look at it in depth, I'm just shocked. Leighton Vander Esch, that wasn't too hot of a pick when it first happened here, and he's been balling out. Byron Jones has really come around.
Yeah, the defense is great. The young guys are coming along really quickly. I think it's a credit to some of the veterans on that defense as well. Like Sean Lee, even though he hasn't been playing and has been injured, and that seems to happen a lot, he's certainly been responsible for helping to bring Vander Esch along. And it speaks to the character of the guys, too, that are willing to work really hard. So, yeah, the defense has been getting better and better week by week. And, I mean, the Amari Cooper dividends, you're still reaping them in Dallas. It's not just the numbers. It's not just the 5-1 record since Cooper joined the team. It's also about what he does for everybody else who's on the field.
Absolutely. The way the rushing game's opened up, it's been great. Mm-hmm. And we're locking up the division today was a good look. That's really all I wanted to add.
I don't think that's official though. You might be jumping the gun a little bit.
I don't think they have, like, officially locked it up yet, but I think for all intents and purposes, especially with Philly's upcoming schedule.
Hey, man, you should know better than to count your chickens in the NFL before they hatch. However, I can understand why you're excited. They do have a 2-game lead for sure with 3 weeks to play. Dre, thank you so much for your phone call.
Have a nice night. Bye.
You too. Just to add on to what Dre was saying, 5 of the first round draft picks since 2009 have made at least one Pro Bowl for the Cowboys. And then to go back to what I was talking about with Big Ben and Mike Tomlin, Ben was saying he was ready to go in. He doesn't know why Tomlin didn't put him back in. Tomlin is saying he was ready at some point in the fourth quarter. Maybe we could have put him in a little earlier, but there was something about the flow of the game, blah, 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 blah. So they didn't get their story straight for sure before they went and met the media. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.